It's about time for us to get started. If you would go ahead and open up to Titus, and we'll pick up there in just a moment in chapter 2. I was asked about regarding the qualifications of elders, and we, as I said, looked briefly at those qualifications earlier and in the book of Timothy. 1 Timothy, and so gave just brief attention to that and looked mostly at the sort of the process of appointing elders as we walk through Titus. But I was asked particularly about the qualification of hospitality, and so we're going to give that some attention this morning before we move forward on into chapter 2. We do have some time to be able to deal with that, and so we'll make some comments on that before we move forward, and then we'll pick up there in chapter 2. As I say, looking at that idea of hospitality when we are considering the qualifications, hospitality is a subject that comes up with some frequency in the New Testament, really in the Old Testament as well, as far as the virtue of hospitality in stories throughout the Old Testament. Looking at hospitality then versus hospitality now and the usage of that word and how it would be participated in, what distinctions do you see in the way that hospitality is spoken of and practiced in biblical times, both Old and New Testament, and the way we generally refer to it? All right, yeah. And so I would say more than extended family, it says strangers, you know, entertain strangers. And so the idea of hospitality is in the scriptures, throughout the scriptures, is an idea of general openness and welcomeness into one's home. And we see the that illustrated, for instance, in the story of the Levite and his concubine in the book of Judges. All right. So they come into this the tribe of Benjamin. Right. And they come into the city. And where does he end up staying before he's invited finally into somebody's home? Yeah, just right out there in the open. And so then this fellow comes along and says, you cannot stay here. You've got to go. And the reason he says is, well, nobody's invited me. But it seems the expectation was surely someone would have. And so there was an expectation of hospitality among the Israelites. And that expectation, of course, continues on into the New Testament, that there's an expectation that homes would be open. Now, as you said, it's not just having someone over for a meal. That is the distinction. Generally, what we mean by hospitality is, would you like to come over for supper tonight? Well, I'm not saying that's not hospitable, but that is only a piece of the hospitality that's spoken of in scriptures. Now, having said that, I would say that there are some distinctions in the culture in which we live and the culture in which they live that would have a demand for hospitality, as it were. We generally do not have strangers coming through and setting up camp in the public square. We have hotels. They would not have had hotels. This would have been a typical thing for you to be able to come into a town and simply say, you know, we need a place to stay. Now, having said that, there are occasions where we still can practice such hospitality. My parents found themselves stranded in Europe. When I was 16 years old, I had a wreck. My brother Nathan was taken by helicopter to the hospital, ruptured spleen, didn't know if he was going to live, and my parents were in Europe at the time. They came into Germany. They could not get a flight. The airport was actually closed in Berlin for the night. The cab driver, who spoke no English and broken Spanish, took them to his own apartment and said, "You stay here the night while I run my cab run. I will pick you up in the morning. I will take you to the airport." That is hospitality. I mean, that is the openness that the scriptures are speaking of. It's saying, you are someone who is in need of a place to stay. You can stay at my house. And so that is the sort of thing that we're talking about. And I grew up with this, and it's so common to me that it's strange to me when I enter to other families where people are uncomfortable with outsiders in their home, because outsiders was all I knew. in our home. We always had somebody not related to us living in our house, it seems like. And so there needs to be a general openness. And we need to be careful that in our society where there's a less of a need, that we still take and seize opportunities to show what hospitality we can. That we do have as much openness as we are capable of having. I understand the need for safety, and I understand the concerns that go along with opening up our homes. But when we can't even open up our homes to fellow Christians, you know, there's a problem with that. And of all people, an elder does not need to be that sort of sequestered person whose house must stay just so, and, you know, they can't have people in because they will mess things up and things like that. There needs to be an openness there above all. Any other comments on that before we move on? Yes, sir. Right. And I think that's true. And there's charity there to be sure. We want to make sure that we include with that as far as hospitality is there's a personal connection with regards to hospitality. So one could be very charitable at a distance, you know, but not hospitable in the sense of I'm not going to get involved and going to give you a check. Hospitality involves some of me as well, along with the care. So the difference between here's some money versus I'm gonna take you to help you and involve not only my resources but myself in the process. So I think that's true, absolutely. But we don't want it to just be I'm sort of delegating my hospitality. And so I think some people would do that. You know, they would distance themselves. But I think absolutely we need to take opportunities like that. Todd, did you have your hand up? Certainly. I mean, I think that's the very definition of it, is what Jesus is referring to there. And that the Jews, the Pharisees particularly, would have become the most inhospitable of people, that they certainly would not have been open and welcoming. Yes, sir.
Keeping a preacher that didn't have
their
need.
Well, right. It depends on the preacher, right? Yeah. You know, sometimes sometimes. Most of the time where I've been involved in that, it's been such a privilege. I hesitate to call that a responsibility. But I dare say some people have put themselves out for me. Yes, sir. Right. It's a warmth. It's an openness, as opposed to a coldness. I mean, you know, we visited places where, you know, church services were over and everybody was gone and we had, you know, we felt alone, you know, out there by ourselves. Yes, sir. Well, appreciate it. We're glad you're here. All right. Let's pick up in chapter 2 then. And let's look here at the instructions. And these instructions, as we pick up here in chapter 2, juxtaposed against the remarks that conclude chapter 1. So chapter 1, we were talking about false teachers at the end there that move from eldership to what elders need to be doing about false teachers. And now it's, but as for you. Some of your translations might just say not you and then go on. There's an emphatic nature to the language at the beginning of this statement. All right. So Paul is saying, you know, here are these people, but you, Titus, here's what they are doing. Here's what you need to be doing. And it is in direct contrast to what they're doing. They're doing something damaging. You need to be doing something to counteract that, to address, really, the damage that they're doing. But as for you, he says, speak the things which are fitting for sound doctrine. And then he goes and gives some specifics with regards to the various classes of people that he needs to be addressing. Older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, in love, in perseverance. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips or enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. Likewise, urge the young men to be sensible. In all things, show yourself to be an example of good deeds. with purity in doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, so that the opponent will be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us. All right. Now, from the beginning, as I say, this is in contrast to what the false teachers are doing. They're speaking false doctrines. They're ones whose mouths must be stopped. You, on the other hand, speak things which are fitting for sound doctrine. The idea of sound doctrine, that's a verbiage that is used when something is sound. What are we saying about it? I mean, what kind of things do you refer to as being sound other than doctrine? Yeah. All right. It's secure. It's safe. It's solid. All right. So you speak those. We also refer to somebody's health being sound, right? Of sound health. And really, that's the verbiage here. It's medical terminology. It's someone who is healthy. Would be referred to this way. And so healthy doctrine. They're preaching a sick doctrine. They are undermining that foundation. They're making it insecure. You make it secure. You come back and you address the illness, the sickness that is being spread by the false teachers. And so that language there pits those two against each other. So this is the people. You know, everybody falls into one of these categories, right? We got older men, older women, younger women, younger men. And so we're all one of those. And so he is to address all of those categories. The problem is sometimes we just assume not being any of them, right? We need to have a little honesty here and say, okay, you know, when I'm in this category, I do have more need to focus on these things. So older men, with regards to them, how would you summarize? What's the nature of what he's saying about older men? Yeah, particularly that word dignified in the New American Standard, at least, I think speaks to that. They need to be able to be looked upon as advisors, right? I mean, they need to have that quality of dignity, reverence. Bran? There you go. Very good.
They're solid.
That's right. They can be relied upon, right? And so, you know, the idea of acting their age, sort of, I think sticks out here, is that the older men ought to act like older men. They need to be men who can be relied upon. And then he said these things sound in the faith, in love, in perseverance. Those three qualities right there. Faith, love, and patience or perseverance. That sound in the faith speaks to that idea of the anchor. They're not tossed to and fro. They're not the people who can be carried about. I think we've had generations of older people who have allowed themselves to be led by younger people. They cater to a younger generation in order to try to be relevant or something of that nature. And while I don't think that they need to be disrespectful or maybe condescending to a younger generation, there does need to be an authority there of the older generation saying, look, you need to listen to what we're saying and not just sort of give up the reins, as it were. They need to be that anchor. And yet, in love. And so it's not just you're standing there, you won't hear anything. No, they're kindness. So they lead not only in the faith, the sureness of that, but they also lead in that example of love and kindness and gentleness that goes along with that, and in perseverance. And I believe that speaks to two things, both the perseverance of being patient with those who they are wanting to instruct and who they're wanting to be examples to, but also enduring, you know, whatever ridicule might come along with taking those stands and so forth. And so continuing to stand in the face of opposition. So I think that kind of works two ways there. But the idea here is just the very opposite of wishy-washiness, the idea of just moving around and being a moving target and so forth. They need to be dependable, somebody you can rely on, somebody that you can trust. So there's the focus for the older men. The older women, likewise, to be reverent in their behavior. And what particularly must they be concerned to stay away from? All right. Silliness, you know, the pettiness, we might say. Again, a lack of maturity. And that's, I think, again, what's being spoken of here. They need to act their age. You know, the older women need to be that example. They need to be those trusted advisors that younger women can look to and rely upon for good counsel. Teaching them, he says, what is good. If this woman is these things, and then she tries to go about in verse 4, teaching the younger, she's going to have no effect. You know, she needs to be able to speak from a position of a good foundation, to be able to speak from a position of maturity and wisdom. And so these things are going to undermine that maturity and that wisdom. All right, so here's the older women, and it says, so that they may teach good, that they may teach especially the younger women. And what are they to teach the younger women to do? All right, to love their husbands and their children. Things not generally put in the category of instruction, right? Most of the time, you know, love of one's husband is spoken of in terms of something that is there or it is not. You are in love or you're out of love. You fall into it, you fall out of it. And here, there's a little bit of coldness to the notion of being taught to love ones. And even further, the notion of being taught to love your children. I love my children. I don't need to be taught to love my children. There's a how. You know, there's a base instinct that says I have affection for. But being taught how to love your children. A misguided love can wreak havoc both in the marriage and in the parenting relationship. A misguided love can turn into bitter jealousy. I love them so much that I don't want to see them talking to anyone else. We got to be careful of that. A misguided love for children can turn into permissiveness. And so it needs instruction and says, if you love them, then you want them to turn out this way. And so you will do these things to prepare them for that. So it needs some molding and it needs some instruction and guidance. Even when there is already natural affection, that must be molded and directed. And the older women need to be in a position to be able to do that. If they're going to be in a position to be able to do that, what must they already be themselves? There you go. All right. So when someone comes up to you and says, could I give you some parenting advice? And you look over and their children are criminals, you might say, no, thanks. Or you can, and I'll be sure to put that on the list of things not to do. You want to take advice from people who have done well and have followed this advice that they're going to give to you and have shown by good example that they are capable of carrying those things out. All right, so with regards to the family, there's some instruction that needs to be passed on there. And then, and let me just say, I think that relationships need to be built and conversations need to be had such that this is not just an occasional busybodiness that comes up and taps on a young mother's shoulder and says, I'd like to butt into your business. But relationships need to be developed there. A mentor kind of relationship needs to be developed such that that advice can be given. And older women who have that maturity need to have the confidence and the will to say those things. And older men as well, because I think very often we just want to stay out of other people's business to the point that no advice is getting passed along. And that is a shame that good characteristics are not being passed from one generation to another. Brad. And I think that's true with this caveat. I think there's a reason he puts older women in the position of teaching the young women. All right. So Titus is instructing older men, Timothy instructing older men. They're instructing younger women. And so they're involved in this instruction process. But there's a reason he says these are going to be particularly well qualified. If they meet these qualifications, if they are a good example, they're going to be in the best position to be able to pass along that advice. Absolutely, somebody who has the scriptures can teach. I would even say that somebody who's made mistakes can learn from them and say, don't do what I did. What's terrible is when someone's made all the mistakes, but they don't realize it and say, well, here's what I always did, as if that's some kind of authority when the results are catastrophic. And so, what we want to recognize here is that positioning that puts an older woman in a good position to be able to instruct younger women. He goes on to give some other instructions that need to be passed along from older to younger. And what are those? In summary, we might say. Right. All right. Yes. Sober-minded, sensible, and workers at home. You be an asset to the home. And if I may say, it rings of Proverbs 31. You be the woman in the home that Proverbs 31 describes that woman as. And so here's a brief way of saying, bringing those qualities forward and saying, this is what you need to teach them to be. In providing that instruction, I give you an example of a failure. A friend of mine was preaching at a congregation, and some of the women, and men, got distressed at the course that the dress was taking, and dress becoming more immodest and so forth. And some of the older women wanted something said about it. And so they went to the preacher and they say, you need to say something about the dress in this congregation. And it was two or three older women that came up to him and sort of, cornered him and said, do something about this. So he did. And he preached from this passage about older women instructing the younger women. And because he asked, have you said anything to them? Well, no, that's your job. He said, that's like your job. And Paul tells Titus it's his job to tell them that it's their job. And so he did. It didn't go over very well, but that's the way it ought to be, is that it's not, the older women do not, distance themselves and say, those younger women over there are this, and that. Then do something about it. Build, work towards a relationship there. Treat them as if they were your daughter. And give them that kind motherly advice. And it doesn't mean it'll always go well, but the effort needs to be put forth. Yes, sir. Absolutely. And so both on the giving and receiving end, there's work to do. That's right. Right. We should not quickly dismiss. Absolutely. Even if we do not agree. I dare say most of us have disagreed with our parents' advice at some point and found ourselves later saying the very things we said we would never say, when we became parents. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely. And we are, we are worse for it when older men and women set it down and fade into the background, before their time. Yes, sir. Sure. That's going to go a long way in opening up this dialogue, if you will, opening up a conversation to show yourself on the front side, willing to listen and not waiting for someone to come tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, I need to talk to you about something. Absolutely. There's that. That's going to be very helpful in that scenario. And it might help some of that difficulty of the older people perceiving a sense of younger people being not willing to listen. Well, show them that you are willing to listen. And so, yes, I absolutely think some proactiveness there is very helpful.
Steven,
yes, sir.
There's a two-way street there.
Right. Right. And I think it's balance all along the way in every area. An older person has to maintain dignity, and sometimes in order to be open, an older person goes so far as to try to be, relevant or hip or whatever, and they lose their dignity. And so there's got to be that balance of maintaining dignity and yet an openness, as you say. Yes, sir. Right. If we put ourselves in the position of the cloistered away Pharisees, And we are up here in our ivory tower and only come down to speak to the little people when we've got a correction to make, then it's not going to go over very well, as it didn't in that time. And so it's got to be that familial relationship, which is what the church should be, is a familial relationship. All right. And so then he says the young men should be sensible. And I believe here's another indication that Titus is a young man, because the instructions continue with, in all things, show yourself. And so I think that ties into the instructions given to the young men. Now Sam. Right. That is a little bit more clear in its need to be instructed than, say, love for husband, right? Love for husband seems a little more natural. This does not seem as natural, and maybe needs even a little more instruction. All right. And so as he turns to the young men, if Titus is not a young man, then Paul's instruction to the young men is, relatively to everything else he has to say, quite brief, as he only says, be sensible. But I think if you bring in the instructions to Titus and include him in the category, then it sort of fills out going along with the rest of what he's had to say. Older men, older women, younger women, and now young men, among which Titus would be one. And so you yourself, do these things. So sensible, and then bringing in Titus, good example, or example of good deeds, purity in doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, and so that the opponent will be put to shame. When you look at the qualities that he's speaking of there, what does that passage remind us of that we've already studied? Looking back to Timothy. What did Paul have to say to Timothy as far as being an example? Very good. I like that. And so with the message in 1 Timothy 4, 12 is, as opposed to the message to the older men, act your age, act older than your age, act better than your age. As a young man, you need to aspire to greater things than just the general, notions of your age group. Be better than that. Be an example. And particularly here, as he, getting back to what he has to say to Titus, when he tells him to be a good example in all of these things, and in his words, he sets a rather high standard. And this speaks to some of what we've had to say with regards to, the great responsibility that Paul places on Timothy and now places on Titus. What is the concern here with regards to Titus's words? And think about this very high standard. And right, does Paul have to say to Titus, basically, don't say anything out of order? That's pretty strong, isn't it? So what do you do with that? I mean, why does he tell him that? And isn't that a bit much to ask? Or why is it not a bit much to ask? All right, very good. It's the position Titus is in. You are proclaiming God's word. You are a representative. You're an ambassador of God's word by being the one who is up there proclaiming it. You of all people have to be so careful about the words that you use. And then he says with regards to that, and he points to the problem. If he does get out of line, what does he leave the door open for? Yeah, for the opponents to criticize. Did Christianity have its opponents then? Oh, yeah. Does it now? Very good. The opponents are sometimes among us, even. Yes, sir. Right. Right. Well, one thing I've said about the qualifications of elders from time to time is that, regardless of whether you want to be an elder or not, those are good advice to follow. And so, yes, this would lead on that path. Particularly, and so you kind of, as you bring that and you see a parallel, you see the similarities between that and an eldership, I think what you see is the responsibilities of an evangelist. There's some overlapping there with the responsibilities and the the requirements that are going to be, you know, the burden on an evangelist are going to overlap with the burden on the elders. And in the same way, there's very much a representation of God's word from the evangelist, just as there is from the eldership. And so he must be more cautious in his words and so forth. Now, if anything, I think that the instruction is of greater importance now, if it could be of greater importance. It is more now than it ever has been, because people have such access to our words. What I'm saying right now is being recorded and is going to be put on the internet for all the world to hear. And what I say later today is going to be the same. And what I write is put out there for everyone to see. And so it is accessible. And so one who is an opponent has total access. I better be very careful, because I'm not just speaking to the home crowd who's going to give me a benefit of the doubt if I make a misstep. Everybody hears these things. And so you have to take that into consideration. And if Titus needed to take that into consideration in a time where the only people hearing him were the people right in front of him, then you more so need to take that into consideration as our words have farther reaching effects. All right, we'll pick up there on Wednesday. Appreciate everybody's good attention.